Anansi's stories may be love stories, but they are also histories. And long ago we concluded, sadly, that all history is tragedy, especially for the people of Anansi. So, all love stories are tragedy. But tragedy, love, death, sadness, these are just inventions in our search for simplicity. We are but low creatures seeking to make sense of a world that does not function logically. Hello again, dear listener. I remain not history, but an interloper. For this two-part epilogue, I am your humble narrator. So I really must insist that you listen to part one, and then this part after. But this is no time for a palaver. Let us resume our love story, our fantasy, our disaster. Last we spoke of Kala and Luke, about whose passions Ezekiel eventually discovered the truth. Still, he did not know for sure, and he was no brute. Maybe he suspected, but he needed proof. If he acted hastily, his father would disapprove. Performing slaves are far too valuable to lose. He was, however, almost driven crazy when he searched her room and found letters written so passionately that for a moment he cursed the life that made her his property, instead of just a woman about whom he could also wax poetically. He begged her for a name, and he promised mercy. It is a testament to his kindness that he only tried to persuade her mind and not her body. Finally, frustrated, he tried to write her his own testimony. I was told you were mine before I could stand, but I was also yours. I tried to earn what I could rightfully demand, and I would earn it again by climbing mountains or scrubbing floors. I would do whatever you asked me to, take you to a faraway place where you could truly be free, and the world would see you like I see you, if you ask it, and if you choose me. There were tears in her eyes as she read, and she meant every word of it when she said, "This life has played many cruel tricks, but it has also given me your friendship. If I could give what you ask, then I would gladly give it. You saw a woman where they told you there was only a beast. You have made sure that I have known only peace. You have kept me safe, but yours. Now I must ask you for release." Maybe he did love her. Or maybe he just wanted her as his lover. In any case, how he felt did not matter when he mentioned the issue to his father. The elder Brown saw opportunity in his son's heartache. He listened carefully to what Ezekiel had to relate. Then he told the boy what steps to take. "You are a master and there is no room to negotiate. Instead, now is the time to educate. Not just Kala, but the entire estate. There might not be sugar or tobacco, but there is still a gate. And within it, reality is what we dictate." And so, Brown wrote his greatest play yet. It was Hamlet, it was Lear, it was his Macbeth. And at the end, a single slave was put to death. It was an expensive venture, but it brought the crowd to a fervor, and the next night the estate was more full than ever. Never to disappoint, Brown killed another. And Kala understood, because Ezekiel told her, that the killing stopped when she agreed again to be his lover. Brown had discovered the estate could make more than ever, if every night he killed a performer. Her letters to Luke were no longer declarations of passion. Instead, they were somber warnings of one who had started to reckon that following her heart would only lead to destruction. "They told me I was his before I understood, and he told me he was mine before he took me. Maybe I loved him once before I could know that you exist and are my destiny. Still, you must forget me for good, like your life depends on it. It is a hard thing to ask, I know, but I would cut out my own heart and bury it to see you whole every night during the show and not put to death by that cruel old man's whip. And try to forget they did, but the Elder Brown was wicked, his new stories earning him untold profit. You could call it greed, but in truth, the old man had gone rabid, and he could not stop once he had started. So Luke heard Ezekiel's promise, but did not trust. He saw the old man's eyes gleaming with a familiar bloodlust. He had seen that look before and knew that they must run before the Browns gave up their pretense of being just. And he told Kala as much. Run with me. I would die with you in the forest. At least we would be together in eternity. Damn the dogs, the men, and their muskets. Damn a world that would take you from me. Name a thing and I will risk it, to live or die with you as my final memory. All life is a love story, listeners. Perhaps even more so for Anansi's followers. They were usually in love with freedom but denied power. Luke and Kala, however, were in an equally ill-fated romance with each other. Once again, her response was short and somber. I would risk things dearer to me than simply living. Meet me tonight when the slaves start singing. So, when the first group of actors began reciting, "Welcome to the estate, where magic and music create. As you rest your weary backs in callous hands, sit down, sprawl out, or stand," Luke and Kala snuck off into the coming darkness of the evening. In the history of the estate, only one show never made it to the ending, because two of the lead slaves were running. The estate had no armed men for pursuing. Richard Brown knew that there were far better ways for keeping slaves who feared many things worse than dying. Still, it meant Ezekiel had no help to recover his lost property. He panicked and sat down in the dirt pathetically. His aging father, however, was still a master of oratory. Using his cane, he hobbled to center stage hastily. His voice was strong, even if the same could not be said for his body. "My God-fearing brothers, you have come to the estate many times. You know how well we treat the niggers. We teach them to dance and we make them rhyme. But they are seldom beaten and often fed. Would it then shock this group tonight if in spite of this I said, a boy and a girl have taken flight? But they do not just run from me. They do not just run from my kindness. They run into the night to disrupt the destiny of this very place that we have reclaimed from the wilderness. So I ask you for your horses, your strength, and your guns to bring back these runaways, not just for my family and my son, but for the honor of every God-fearing white man here today." The Elder Brown could still rustle a crowd, so when the 30 or so men volunteered, they were loud. Kala and Luke ran as fast as their legs allowed, but they were no match for horses being spurned by those who were hateful and proud. And they had been slaves their whole lives, so they did not know the mountains or the way to the Maroons or where to hide. Holding hands, they pushed blindly through the darkness, hoping to find salvation on the other side. Then in the distance, they heard a noise that filled them with fright. It grew louder and closer, run as they might. Overwhelmed, they fell to the ground, screaming and writhing, and remained there when the impromptu slave hunters came looking. The hunt was over, and the men were disappointed to have been denied the thrill of the chasing. Richard Brown was older, so he was trailing, but Ezekiel was there, and he dismounted to examine that which legally he had been born owning. Then he kicked her, the first time he had ever hit her in anger. But all of a sudden, Kala and Luke were screaming no longer. Their bodies relaxed and their breathing grew heavier. Ezekiel did not notice when the air began to tremor. When he aimed the shotgun at Luke's head, he made it spit fire. The sound of the rifle was deafening against the quiet of the night. Dust flew up from the forest floor, hiding the already insufficient light. When it cleared, Ezekiel's eyes widened with fright. Luke was standing, unarmed and ready to fight. He'd always been bigger than Ezekiel, but now he seemed filled with power and might. Luke's once brown eyes were now black, the teeth in his mouth stretched out menacingly like a trap. Ezekiel only managed a single step back before Luke sunk his massive teeth into the white man's neck and broke it with a crack. Some of the men tried to run, and a brave soul may have even fired a gun. But those horses who chose to stay with the riders many decided to abandon began collapsing like shadows under the force of the sun. There was Kala, her green eyes now pools of blackness and anger. She hunted the men like a panther. A few of them escaped, but when it was all over, Kala and Luke were covered in the blood of their pursuers. The next part is told by Richard Brown. It is not a story of love, but a story of love torn down. An evil that would eventually gain great renown. Richard Brown was many wicked things, but he was also a thespian, so he wrote it down. I stared at the red of my boy's blood, until red gave way to blackness and blackness to more blackness. Then it was like I was caught in a flood. I was certain this was a kind of madness. I heard something say my name. Or maybe I just knew something wanted my attention. The darkness gave way to a single flame, and what I saw made me regret reclaiming my vision. Red robes flowed all around it, a face hidden in shadow, a clawed hand like a gnarled stick. Glowing eyes made it hard to swallow. I understood its offer. Give it the thing that was already in pain. Swap a soul to be stronger and live longer. To visit vengeance on those who had destroyed my name. Kala and Luke lived for a while in the forest. They were now unafraid, immortal, and at their happiest. They fed with an Obaifo's aggressiveness. But they had also been slaves and learned not to be careless. They picked off drunks and others who they hoped would not be missed. But mostly they loved each other and were free and held these things dearest. Hunters and runaways alike who entered the forest would tell stories of the two lovers laughing and dancing in the ocean mist. But all history is tragedy. Especially the history of Anansi. And many days later, Luke was the first to notice the man walking quickly. Dressed in black robes, he moved across the sand easily. Luke did not recognize him, but he was hungry. He did not notice that the man showed no fear and indeed seemed to grow ready. Kala knew the figure better, and she screamed out to her lover. She saw from where she stood that the thing wearing Richard Brown's face was Richard Brown no longer. Luke stopped and stared, partially in fear and partially in anger. Richard Brown smiled and motioned him closer. When the old man laughed, it was the same hollow rumble that you, listener, know belongs to the hunter. Hello, dear listeners. This is the end of the first season. If you've hung around for this long, then thank you. If you just stumbled across this episode on your podcast player of choice, then thank you as well. There are many more stories about the people of Anansi that I hope to share with you in the future. Kala's story is just beginning, and I would like to spend some time with Kamau again. I assure you that you will be hearing from history and memory in the new year. If you enjoyed what you heard, I would ask you not for a donation, but to leave a review on Apple Podcasts and follow the Anansi Chronicles on Twitter and Facebook. The links are in the show notes. I would also appreciate if you would share this episode with your friends. This is nothing if not a labor of love, and I hope to continue this project for a little while yet. Until next time, keep the faith, and thanks for listening.